we used to live in a world where going on the internet was its own separate special activity. Now we have the internet in our pocket. We don't log on to the internet anymore. We're just there most of the time. And our next guest predicts that we will continue to become even more connected. We're now able to buy more smart internet-connected devices than ever before. Thermostats, outlets, microwaves, crockpots, fitness trackers, dog collars, bathroom scales, even pacemakers. Eventually, it will become difficult to buy an item that isn't internet-connected. So this internet interconnected network is what's referred to as the Internet of Things, or IoT for short. And just like computers can be hacked, so can the IoT. And what happens if we live in a future where city streets and highways are all on the same interconnected grid? Could everything go down all at once? Our next guest says there's a lot at stake if we don't do something before we keep moving forward. Bruce Schneier is a security expert who's been writing about security and the internet for his blog since 2004. He's a lecturer at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. His latest book is called Click Here to Kill Everybody: Security and Survival in a Hyper-Connected World. Bruce, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's nice to be cold again.
Yeah, yes. Isn't it, though? Bruce, it used to be that we'd buy products that had computers in them, but now the products that we buy are changing. I mean, we're buying things that are more like computers that happen to have other functions. So whether it's home appliances or fitness trackers, smart bathroom scales, etc., that connect to our smartphones. And that's what you have and what many people refer to as the Internet of Things. But it's more complex and covers even more territory than that. Can you give us a better idea of what exactly the Internet of Things is?
Exactly is hard because it's changing all the time. But it generally refers to the Internet of Objects. So, you know, you said in your introduction, we're used to visiting the Internet, right? We go to our laptops and log on to the Internet. Or we go into our phone and look at it and browse a web page or send a text message. Internet of Things is the internet of non-screens, of common objects, our car, our refrigerator, our thermostat. You mentioned our pacemaker. These objects, which are connected all the time, and we don't interact with them in the same way, that they are part of our environment. Maybe it is a webcam we use as a baby monitor. And these are, or a smart doorbell. And these are all on the internet. They're going to be much more than the phones and computers. We kind of only have one of each of those. But the objects will have tens and eventually hundreds of these objects in our lives, in our homes, in our work, that are connected to the internet at all times, that are collecting data, processing it, and then making decisions and then acting on it. I mean, right now I live in Minneapolis, I'm in Cambridge. I have a thermostat that I can control from my phone, even though I'm half a continent away. Now, which is really valuable right now when I wanna make sure that my pipes aren't gonna freeze, but there's security risks. What happens if that thermostat is hacked and someone turns off the power? I'm looking at a lot of property damage when I get home this weekend.
Now, you say in your book, Bruce, that the our concept of the internet is changing, that we don't think of it as logging on anymore. Now, you just shared one example, but can you explain a little bit further as to why that matters?
It changes our relationship. Right, so you have a traditional idea that of your phone, that you go on the internet when you pick it up and you turn it on and you check your Facebook or check your messages or make a Skype call. But in fact, that phone's on the internet constantly. The internet has to know where you are physically, otherwise the phone can't ring. You're getting alerts. So it's this constant connection. Somebody's called ubiquitous computing, somebody's called persistent computing, that changes our relationship with computers, right? No longer is it a separate space we visit. It is a constant aspect of our life. And it's worth talking about why this happened. So internet connected refrigerator, that's the thing that is the butt of all the jokes, right? It's made fun of on television by talk show hosts. Why would you put your refrigerator on the internet? I mean, why would you care that it knows you're out of milk or has a screen in the front where you can see what's inside? Can't you open the door? This is all kind of dumb. And in fact, for decades, refrigerators had microcontrollers, had computing. But they were always specialized chips designed to be a refrigerator. What changed is now it is cheaper to pull a generic internet-ready tiny computer off the shelf, program it with refrigerator stuff, and put it in the refrigerator. So now it is a computer that keeps things cold. And it comes with the internet. It comes with a microphone. It comes with speakers. It comes with memory. It comes with all of the browsing. So you have all the functionality built in. Because it was cheaper that way, because it came that way. And then manufacturers, whether it's a refrigerator, a car, or a microwave, or a toy, what can we do with it? And this is how we end up with this Internet of Things.
Bruce Schneier joins us. He is a security expert who has been writing about the Internet and security for his blog since 2004. He's the author of the latest book entitled Click Here to Kill Everybody, Security and Survival in a Hyper-Connected World. Bruce, you know, one of the things that's beginning to happen and will likely continue to happen is that it's becoming a challenge to find and purchase a product that doesn't offer some type of internet connectivity. Now, you had this problem when you were buying a new car. Tell us a little bit about that.
So this is interesting. I'm trying to buy a new car, and because I'm a security guy, I don't want the internet. And I found that I couldn't find a car that didn't come with connectivity. Not that they didn't exist, but you know, my wife and I had a list of features and things we wanted out of the car, and we had a short list of models that met our criteria. All of those came with the internet. And I would ask, can you turn this off? And the dealer would look at me like, why would you want to do that? And this is the internetification of these things. Because they're there, because they're ubiquitous, it'll become increasingly hard. I mean, now you can buy a refrigerator without the internet. In 5 years, you probably won't be able to. Not because there's some, you know, evil genius who's trying to make these things internet enabled, because it is just cheaper and easier for the manufacturers to make these internet connected refrigerators. And then once they do, they now can monitor your usage. They can upsell you features, right? Suddenly it becomes a much more interactive, full-featured device. And manufacturers want that, right? They want to control the aftermarket for your appliances, for your automobile, even your toys or your light bulbs. Yeah, and that's pushing a lot of this internetification. You see it in commercial objects, high-end espresso machines and coffee bars and restaurant equipment, office equipment. You have an office copier, it's on the internet. And these are often used to upsell spare parts and upsell replacements. And it's a lot of control going on here. I mean, we sort of see it in things like the Amazon Echo, right, which wants to be this single hub for your home where you talk to. And if you think about it, that's also on all the time. You don't log into your Amazon Echo like you log into your laptop. It's there all times listening, right, just in case you might want to say something it wants to hear.
Bruce, and not to scare anyone, but I think it's important to talk about, wasn't there an incident a few years ago that there was a car that was hacked because it had the computer systems inside of it a few years ago?
There's been more than one instance of car hacking.
Okay.
The one you're probably thinking of, and actually there's a video on YouTube, it's worth watching, Wired Magazine had a reporter in a car, and two security researchers hacked the car remotely from about 10 miles away. And they did things like, you know, turn on the radio and then turn on the wipers, and then they disabled the brakes. And that's scary.
Yeah.
And this was a vulnerability. The manufacturer had to make a 1.4 million car recall. This was Chrysler. I think it's 2014. To fix this, there are other vulnerabilities. There are researchers looking at airplanes. We worry about remote hacking about airplanes. You know they're on the internet, right? You know, if you fly and you pay the extra $20, you can browse in the internet while you're flying. So we know there is an air-to-ground link of the internet. Boeing and others claim it's not connected to the avionics, and then there's reason not to believe that. We worry about the national power grid, hacking there. I mean, things big and small. If you remember, Dick Cheney famously had the remote features of his pacemaker disabled because we were worried, and the legitimate worry, about foreign assassination over the internet. So these things are still science fiction-y, but they are legitimate concerns.
We're talking with Bruce Schneier, a security expert who's been writing about the internet and security for his blog since 2004. He's a lecturer at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government, and his latest book is called Click Here to Kill Everybody, Security and Survival in a Hyper-Connected World. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have a few smart devices in your homes? What do you enjoy about them, and what do you worry about? What questions do you have about internet security now and in the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue this conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Darrell Conner. We're continuing our conversation with Bruce Schneier. He is a security expert who's been writing about the internet and security for his blog since 2004. He's also a lecturer at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. His latest book is called Click Here to Kill Everybody, Security and Survival in a Hyper-Connected World. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What kind of smart devices do you have in your home? How do they help you? Do you think cybersecurity is something we should be more concerned about? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email at ideas@WPR.org. Now, despite, Bruce, the extreme title of your book, there are some advantages to this Internet of Things. I mean, it isn't all bad.
It's not even close to all bad. I mean, yeah. There's some enormous advantages. And my belief is that we're not even beginning to see them. I mean, we can laugh about appliances on the internet. But I think once this interconnected home and office and life gets going, there'll be enormous advantages and things we can't even conceive of yet. I mean, I write about security. I write about the dark side of this. But you know, I don't want to paint myself as someone who says we should not do any of this. Right? We should do this, but in a way that is secure. Well, you go.
I was going to ask you, what are some of the positives or potential positives to a connected world?
That data moves seamlessly. That information about what we're doing goes to places where it can provide value, and we get it back in a way that adds value. Think of a cell phone. A cell phone connects an enormous amount of data about us. It's very powerful. Yet the things we do with it are amazing. And when Steve Jobs, you read his initial writings about the iPhone, he never imagined that it would do all the things it is doing today. And I think even today, we can't imagine what will happen when our homes are connected. When in fact, my thermostat is smart enough to get the weather report and know that it has to do with certain things because it's going to be minus 20-something crazy in Minneapolis tonight, and I'm not going to be home, right? And it's going to know all those things and then be able to adjust the temperature so that my pipes don't freeze and I'm conserving energy, right? That sounds really valuable, and that's just one minor thing.
Yeah, there's still many people who are more comfortable with life before everything was connected. For younger people, it's all they know. But it seems like when the new technology comes along, we as consumers will buy the product, we trust the market with no questions asked. Is that something you see? And because of that, should we be exercising more caution?
So I think we should. Well, a couple of answers. I don't think it is fair to ask consumers to exercise more caution. That we generally believe that the government keeps us safe, right? That we can walk into a restaurant and not have to inspect the kitchen, that we can go to a pharmacy, buy a drug, and know that it's not going to kill us, that we walk into a building and know it's not going to collapse on us, even in an earthquake. And these are all government regulations that makes that happen. I flew here from Minneapolis yesterday, and I did not inspect the airplane. And so similar things have to happen with the Internet of Things. Because this new Internet, because it's cars and planes and medical devices, because it can actually kill you in an extreme, that government needs to step in and ensure that things are safe so consumers can buy and use them in confidence without having to be domain experts in computer security, in medical devices, in any of those subject matters, just like the rest of the world. And that's really what's missing. And I think that's going to naturally change, because as computers start becoming not about data but about flesh and blood and concrete and steel, that government regulates dangerous things. It does.
Well, one of the reasons why I asked the question, Bruce, is because there are some who believe, like with some phones that have fingerprint recognition, or there's some tablets that have facial recognition, and there are people who believe that that information goes straight to the government and that you shouldn't have it. So what do you say to those folks who believe that?
Well, they're both right and wrong. It doesn't go straight to the government. It goes straight to Apple. It goes straight to Facebook. It goes straight to Google. It goes straight to these mega corporations. Mm-hmm. And then when the government wants it, they ask those corporations. Right? This is different than China, where it actually does go straight to the government. But in the United States, we have this one-step remove. Doesn't make it any better. Doesn't mean we should worry about it less. But we don't really have this tight government corporate integration that you'll see in other societies. And yes, that is worrisome. The fact that Facebook and Google are able to collect this data without our knowledge and consent, use it for whatever they want, is very dangerous, even without government sharing.
Now, the whole point of your book is to let us know that we do not have enough internet security systems in place. So let's get into that for a minute. How are we used to maintaining security in our systems? I mean, why won't that be enough in the Internet of Things?
Well, it hasn't been enough yet, so it's not going to change, right? I mean, and you know this when you read the papers. So, right, it's in the papers this week, a security bug in Apple FaceTime, where someone can eavesdrop on what's going on in a room before the recipient picks up the call. I mean, that is just one of many. I mean, and those things happen every week, right? It's a data breach at Marriott Hotels a month ago, and next week it'll be something else. So, right, internet security isn't working very well, right? The Chinese steal data from the U.S. government. The Russians hack our power plants. This all hits the news. So what's different is most of the time it's about data, right? You know, Facebook eavesdrops on what's going on. It's data. And someone hacks into Yahoo and steals a bunch of customer data or Equifax. It's data. It's personal, but it's data. What's changing is that now the internet will affect the world in a direct physical manner. If my thermostat gets hacked, I don't care if they get my data. I care if they shut it off, because it's going to be freezing tonight. And if they shut it off, that's property damage. Now, Dick Cheney wasn't worried that the Russians would hack his heart monitor and get data. They were worried they would deliver a lethal shock that would kill him. And that's the change. And that, I think, is going to spur government to get involved.
Right now, there are some big agencies and companies who benefit from insecurity. And you wrote a whole chapter in this in your book that Google wants us to have security just as long as it can gather our data and sell ads. And, I mean, that's just one example. Can you, we have a couple of minutes, but I wanted to ask you, can you tell us a little bit more about surveillance capitalism?
So surveillance capitalism is the business model of the internet. Right? This is how companies make money in the modern era. They collect and monetize our data, sometimes by selling it, sometimes in the case of the big companies like Facebook and Google, selling access to it, not selling it directly. But our cell phone companies, the websites we visit, the apps we use, and increasingly these objects in our environment collect and sell data. Well, we know that Roomba, the robot vacuum cleaner, collects data about the size and shape of your house based on it like scurrying around vacuuming, and sells that data.
Wow.
And this is the modern economy. Surveillance capitalism is a term. Shoshana Zuboff, professor here at Harvard, has a new book on surveillance capitalism, really worth reading. And this is the business model, and it also fosters control. I mean, once Roomba knows how often you use it, how dirty your floors are, it could, you know, try to sell you a better model. It knows when you're making this up, when your vacuum cleaner bag is full and you need to buy more supplies. And so this kind of monitoring goes hand in hand with control. Now you see it in farm equipment. John Deere does a lot of monitoring when farmers buy and use John Deere equipment. And it sells that data back to the farmers.
Last question. We have about 30 seconds left, but I wanted to ask you, do you think we will wake up and realize our vulnerabilities in a connected world?
I go back and forth. My fear is it will take a disaster. Right? My title of my book is the kind of fanciful click here to kill everybody. It's not going to be everybody, but I worry that it will be a disaster with cars that causes a few thousand of them to crash, or a disaster with medical devices, that I think we will wake up, but it will take something of that magnitude to do it. My hope is we can do better policy before there's a disaster. I think we are better as society if we are proactive, but generally we tend to be reactive. We tend not to fix something until it's really obvious that it's broken.
Bruce, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. This was fun.
Thank you. Take care. That was Bruce Schneier, a security expert who's been writing about the internet and security for his blog since 2004. His latest book is called Click Here to Kill Everybody, Security and Survival in a Hyper-Connected World.